If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Hawk Week podcast. I'm Hawk Week editor Matt Appleby, and today I'm with veteran landscaper Alan Sargent. So welcome, Alan.
Good morning to you.
Excellent. Well, great to have you on. You've been a Hawk Week columnist for many years. You're very well known in the industry. And the new thing which is happening with you and what we're basing this podcast around is your new book, Confessions book. That sounds a bit risque, is it?
It's Confessions of a Gardener. For quite a few years now, about 15 years at least, I do a lot of talks for gardening clubs and societies and so on. And I called it Confessions of a Gardener because obviously it intrigues people to come along and see what it's all about, thinking about the old 1970s Confessions films with whatever his name is. So that's a part of the fun. The stories are, they're all genuine. They're all redacted, no names and addresses and so on. But they are, because they're a series of stories and tales, I can start, each one almost starts with a once upon a time. And I'll just tell the story, that's always funny about what happened with clients and so on. And so I decided, okay, every time I go to one of these meetings, they say, why don't you write a book? Well, I do a lot of writing, as you know. So I thought, okay, I'm going to put them all into one book form. And as I started doing the writing, it was quite intriguing because I thought, well, where do I start? Which story do I tell first? So I started from the beginning. I started that in 1968 in landscaping. So my earliest sort of recollection in the book is from 1970. And I realised it was a different world in those days. Everything was just so different. So I felt I had to explain and describe to the reader why things were different. The fact that for 2 years before when I started, we didn't even have a telephone. We had to rely upon the post, which is actually not a bad thing. You could post a letter one day and get a response the next. We had two posts per day in those days. And it sort of realised that trying to describe to somebody just how different the world was 50 years ago in the world of landscaping.
That really is a different world, isn't it? Yeah, no, those films, Robin Asquith, but I don't see you as being a Robin Asquith character, Alan, because you're a more serious character too. But can you tell us any of the funny stories? Can you give us a flavour?
Sort of, where do I begin? One of my favourite stories I've called The Lord. Now, I'll just tell a little part of the story because it's quite a lengthy one. Some of these stories have more than one part because I've met the same client on different occasions. This particular one, this chap was not a lord in those days. And I built a series of art items in the garden, including footpaths and so on, and a circular pond. This circular pond was in the middle of a footpath. So the footpath went between the back of the house and the swimming pool. And so you can imagine a circular pond with a circular seating wall on either side. So you could sit and look into the pond from two seats built either side of the footpath. And this is all very great. It was wonderful. I mean, really enjoyed doing that because he used all old reclaimed materials and so on. And Clark was thrilled to bits. But and so basically, having got the pond finished and the pump installed, I don't touch electricity. So I made it clear that it'd have to get an electrician to come along and get the thing working. So that was fine. He rang me and said, I've got the pump, you know, all ready to go now. So one Saturday afternoon by appointment, lovely, glorious, sunny June afternoon, I went along to site and got this, you know, to work on this pump to get it, what we call fire it up, to make it work and set, make the settings. As I walked into the back garden, this chap was there with his young lady, beautiful young lady, and they're both lying out on the lawn, but they were both stark naked, which is a bit of a thing, you know, trying to work with a beautiful young lady offering you ice cold lemonade and not knowing where to look, to be honest. And I'm no prude at all, but it was a really funny situation. And anyway, after a while, and I was almost finished doing what I was doing, and the chap got up and walked indoors and came out wearing nothing but a pair of Wellington boots. And he said, come with me, I want to show you something. And I thought, yeah, okay, so what are we going to do? So anyway, we walked out of the garden across a field, like a paddock or meadow next door to the garden. We walked across this field. You can imagine me walking along with this naked fellow, and it was quite funny because I didn't know whether to walk behind or in front or beside, and because he had long legs, I had to almost run to keep up with him. So it must have been a hilarious sight. So anyway, what he wanted, he built a big pond in the grounds, and he wanted it all planted up with daffodils. So that was a project for the winter. So that was like one part of the story, and it was really, really funny because having gone back and left the pump working, a week or so later, I got a call and said, would you mind coming back to site? He said, because I've got a bit of a problem. And obviously very concerned, but knowing the chap was very happy. So I went back to site and he said, I've got a problem. He said, my girlfriend's bought me a birthday present. And it's a bit tricky, he said, because it won't work. And I said, well, what won't work? He said, well, she's bought me a remote-controlled drinks trolley. You can imagine an electric R2-D2 type drinks trolley, hostess trolley. And so he wanted it to come out of the kitchen across a ramp, up the path and into the swimming pool. So they can actually call, she could sit there and call this trolley up the path, trundling up the path. And to save her getting up and going back indoors. That was too funny for words, really. When I tell the story, it's difficult to try and believe it actually happened, but it did. What happened was that the trolley, she couldn't get the trolley to go past the circular pond. So he wanted me to take down the walls at the side, rebuild the walls about a foot further back, so she could negotiate this thing around the pond. And which is fine. It cost a lot of money because it's not a simple job. And so, of course, she can actually sit there and she could call this drinks trolley out from the kitchen, trundle, trundle, trundle up the footpath and serve her at the swimming pool. Well, I wasn't actually there and I never actually saw this thing happen. But apparently about a week later, he rang me up and said, thanks ever so much for doing that. He said, but it shouldn't really have bothered, he said, because the drinks trolley came out, negotiated the circular pond very nicely, and she couldn't stop it, and it went straight into the swimming pool. That was the end of the electronics drink trolley.
Superb. No, I remember reading that one. That was one that stuck in the memory. So you talk about how different it was back then. I mean, some of the stories in the book about you doing Chelsea comparing then and now. So what were the big differences back then in Chelsea?
Well, it's difficult because you don't know. At the time, you don't know. My first Chelsea was in 1983, I think, 83, 84. And, I didn't know any different, shall we say, because having arrived there on site, I did two gardens for a chap called Peter Rogers, and he's an old Chelsea stalwart. And one was for the Sunday Express, and one was for what is now known as Bradstone. And so that was fine, but we didn't know. It's as simple as that. When we arrived on site, 40 years ago. All of the turf was still in place. Nothing had been stripped. I mean, today the whole site is all ready for the contractors to, when they turn up, and all the sites are marked out and spray painted and so on. But 40 years ago, there was nothing marked out. You just knew so vaguely where you were going to be. You'd try and find somebody from the RHS, and they would they'd sort of show you your plot. And after that, you were on your own, which was great because I didn't know any different. So we threw everything I had at these gardens because we're only a small company, and we worked really, really hard from day one. So we got so far ahead of ourselves that we actually sort of finished 3 or 4 days ahead of everybody else. So we thought this was wonderful, and we sort of took this almost to be our trademark of always being the first guys to finish at Chelsea. And but as I say, we were literally on our own. But one thing I did have the benefit of, I had the first mobile telephone installed on a motorbike. Now, that sounds really silly now, but it was £6,000. It cost me £6,000 in a Motorola 9000. And I had this thing installed professionally onto a motorbike. We noticed the first one there because the Sunday Express came out and did a feature on an article on this garden designer with a mobile phone. And it was so funny to think about it nowadays, but I had the only mobile phone on site in Chelsea. So I was very, very popular because everyone wanted to come and use my phone to call up Travis Perkins and so on to get their materials to site. But everything was much more relaxed. I don't know, it's very different. It's like a whole different world. We didn't have all of the facilities that we had that you got today. We had to bring our own barbecue, our own food and so on. And it was a wonderful, friendly, really, really friendly atmosphere with them. Everybody pitching in, all helping each other. I know they do. I know we do nowadays at Chelsea, but in those days we were like a really close-knit family, and everybody knew each other. And working with people like David Stevens, and I think that was his first Chelsea as well. So you mark out basically lifelong friendships from those early days at Chelsea.
There's a lot more health and safety on site now, isn't there? So is that a good thing?
Well, obviously health and safety must be a good thing, but it was It's, again, very difficult because we were working then with very large stones. I mean, David Stevens is very, very well known for his huge York stone flags. Well, they are 200 or 300 weight each. Now, the health and safety rules say you can't lift anything more than 20 kilos. So that would be a nonsense trying to build those sort of gardens with those sort of restrictions. And it was everything was now, as though we were working on site in our own gardens, for clients. That was the sort of atmosphere we had on site at Chelsea. We were working in our own rules, our own way. And it wasn't until much later, probably around about, about mid-90s, that health and safety started getting much, much stricter.
Now, talking of health and safety, you do a lot of legal work. So can you give us a bit of a flavour on the sort of areas you work in there?
Well, for the last, I retired from construction work. I'm 76 now, and I retired from construction work when I was 73. So it wasn't that long ago. My specialty is flint walls. I love working on flint walls. But for the last 30 years, I've been doing what they call consultancy work, which involves expert witness. And for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been doing almost sole expert witness work around the country. And I just get such a huge range, huge variety of complaints, disputes and so on. So basically, I'm not an arbiter, and I don't do mediation. I work on behalf of the court. So I have to follow court's procedure. And it intrigues me and baffles me why some very intelligent people are now thinking about doctors and dentists who will willingly hand over £10,000 or £20,000 in cash to a complete stranger with no contract and no specification, and then wonder why everything's gone wrong. And that's just, it really does baffle me. And I'm working really hard in different areas of the industry to try and get that, get their message across to the public. Please help yourselves.
What sort of cases do you get then?
Oh, it is very interesting. Talking about expert witness cases, let's sort of look at the some of the sort of the scale. One particular one I've got at the moment is quite an intriguing one, which is, what do you call a dead living wall? I've got a site where, and I can't sort of mention where it is or anything, but a public site that had a very, very expensive, you know, 100,000 plus living wall built that's been neglected over the years and has died over the last sort of 10 years. Well, it's very intriguing because it's sort of, you have to try and trace back basically how the system was put together, how it was installed, how it's been maintained. So I have to go back and do all the research on the history of this 10-year-old, now dead living wall. And that's a fun one. You'd spend sort of half the day up in a facelift type lorry doing the research. I get a lot of complaints about porcelain paving. I think porcelain paving is going to be the next big issue, to be honest, because it can't be recycled, and you know, I think it's going to become a case in a few years' time of what do we do with all this, you know, porcelain paving? We can't do anything with it. So I can see there being like a butter mountain, but a porcelain paving mountain of old slabs that have been ripped up.
Do you think the number of disputes are rising?
Well, I deal with about 80 a year, and that's quite a lot for, you know, a one-man organisation. But I do know there are about 7 members of the PGCA who are also expert witnesses around the country, everywhere from, well, we go all over the country, but we're basically based from Cheshire down to Malvern and across the south, Derbyshire. We're all very busy. So I should think probably in total we're dealing with maybe 400 cases a year.
Wow. And as well as porcelain, is there anything else which you think is on the horizon?
Well, we certainly have a lot of problems with artificial grass, not because it's – I'm not going to get involved in the eco-friendly argument, but the biggest problem we have is that the number of installations that are badly constructed are causing so many problems because – a lot of contractors do not understand artificial grass installation. They don't put the foundations down properly so that they're free draining. They don't get the matting secured properly so that it becomes rucked up. And so basically the whole project fails. And you can't just start again. It all has to be ripped up and all done properly again. So I probably condemn something around about, I don't know, 800 metres a year, personally. Easy 800 metres. That's 800 metres of material is going to go into landfill. If it had been installed correctly, wouldn't have gone there.
Wow, that's a lot. What about growing media?
Growing media is another one that's sort of coming in to becoming a problem because there are some cases going around at the moment, which, again, I can't discuss, where growers are actually suing suppliers because the claims they've made for the green waste type product, shouldn't really have said green waste, shall we say the alternatives to peat. The alternatives to peat are not proving to be as effective as they're claimed. And so wiping out whole batches of plants in nurseries. So there are cases coming up from that. It's a new phenomenon, it lasted a few months really.
Is there a lot of them out there?
I don't know yet, and I really don't want to get too involved in that because I can see they're becoming it's going to become quite an issue. That's a forecast rather than a statement.
No, fair enough. And you've written quite a few books in the past. How many books have you written?
About 12 now, I think.
12, wow.
It started out really with the encouragement of the Horticultural Week because I've been writing for you for about 12 years now, 11 or 12 years, and I wrote a book called the Head Gardener's Survival Manual, which is a very obscure sort of title in a way, but I sold about 1,500 copies. Well, that's 1,500 head gardeners that have used the book. And that really sort of linked me in with Hall Week after that because Kate, your predecessor, liked my work, and so I've been writing since then. Now, what I've done since then, I did then the Landscaper's Survival Manual, and I followed that with the Garden Designer's Survival Manual, then the Garden Contractor's Survival Manual, but they were all written for the industry. But I write too for the public. One particular book called Buying a Garden is to try and educate the public of how the correct procedure of working to, you know, towards getting a garden installed, from having the first ideas to introducing a garden designer, selecting a garden contractor, right through to the end.
How do you go about getting them published?
All self-published. I'm very lucky that my son-in-law runs a very good firm, very big firm of printers in Crawley. And so I'm very lucky again, because I don't have to pay out a big sum of money up front to get my books published. I just simply work with their studio. And so instead of having to spend out, say, thousands trying to get a book published, I can do so just for, you know, a few hundred. So this is partly to explain why I write so many books, I suppose.
What have you got lined up book-wise?
The next one coming out about Christmas time, which is a very different one for me. This is called The A to Z of Paving and Associated Works. Now, I'm not trying to write the book on paving. We've got the new British standard coming out, BS 7533-101 and 102, which is due out very shortly. That is the book for paving. But this particular book, The A to Z, is much more about discussing how to overcome all sorts of issues, including looking at hydrological surveys, planning ahead, soil, subbases, and so on. So it's going to be a proper A to Z, including how to maintain paving, all kinds of paving, sustainable drainage paving. It's quite an effort. It's going to take me a good 3 months to write this one.
Wow. Is there anything else you'd really like to tackle when you've, you know, got time, get round to it?
I love working for the whole week, and I've done well over 100 articles for you, and that sounds a lot for, you know, 12 a year. And really, it's always trying to come up with something different, and new. I don't write for the sake of just trying to write a column. I try and look at a particular topic, particular subject, from a different angle, and to provide you, the reader, with the insights gleaned over the last 50 years of 53 years now of working in the industry.
Is there any sort of bugbears you've got? Anything you'd like to see in your industry being tackled legislatively?
Oh, I've got a huge bugbear. I really get so frustrated again when we have, as an industry, we have so many rules and regulations, which is fine. We should have them. I think we should be a licensed industry. We're the biggest gardening country in the entire world, and yet we're the ones that are so lagging behind. I mean, France, Canada, Australia, Germany, America, all landscape contractors have to be licensed. But we don't have any of this. So we've got all these hundreds and hundreds of unlicensed companies out there who really shouldn't be practicing. Now, if you think of that, so not only unlicensed, but they're uninsured, they don't have any compliances whatsoever. But because we as an industry are absolutely bogged down with compliances, everything from the construction design management regulations to all of the consumers acts and so on, we, as Association of Professional Landscapers members, we all work to work to compliance and to try and get the documentation part correct. And I just really like to try and get the message across to the government that the one way that we can make this right is to, in fact, say to the general public, look, if you don't employ somebody who is properly insured and properly ratified, if you like, you won't have any insurance and you won't have any comeback in court. I think that might make people learn not to hand over £10,000 in cash to a stranger, because if they couldn't actually, they didn't have that trigger point of having done their due diligence, then they would have any recall and recourse to go to court. So I think a bit of carrot and stick.
Sounds like a good idea. How do you think that would work practically?
I think it would work very well practically, because there'd be no need to have anybody going around sort of ratifying somebody. There'd be no need for any vetting procedure, because quite simply, if Mr. Homeowner, Mrs. Homeowner, said they're going to get their garden done, the first question they say to the contractor is, I need to see your insurances. If you're going to be using a digger on site, I need to know that you've got the proper certificates for it. And that just make them aware that if they don't ask these questions, if they don't work to a contract, if they don't work to CDM regulations, then they won't have any insurance or any comeback via the courts. And I think that message would soon get out. It wouldn't need to have an army going around and checking people.
No, well, that's good stuff. Well, we've covered a lot of ground, Alan, and we're drawing towards the end of the podcast now. But at the end of our Hort Week podcast, we always ask the same question of our guests, which is, what is your favourite plant? What plant would you take to a desert island if you could take no other?
I would take Pieris in variety. I absolutely love Pieris. They do so many things, from looking fantastic in the autumn, fantastic in the spring with their flowers and they're just the most amazing plants.
Excellent. Pieris, what a good choice. Now, I've been talking to Alan Sargent, a veteran landscaper and author and Hort Week columnist. And this has been the Hort Week podcast. So make sure you never miss a Hort Week podcast. Subscribe to or follow Hort Week podcasts via Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. So once again, thanks to Alan Sargent. I'm Matthew Appleby, and goodbye till next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Tsinis.
Kayla Tsinis. I'm Kayla Tsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.